Thank you, Rob. My name is Hiroshi. I am an alcoholic. I'm really grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. I'm so glad to be back here at Newcomers International. I want to thank Sharon for asking me. And I want to also thank Rick for showing up on here as well. He just celebrated 3 years. He's in New York City. Mel, I saw, was logged on. I think she's like in Times Square, muted and listening to it with a friend. And I've got my sponsee Lil on here, and John, my seeing eye newcomer. Really, really grateful that you're here. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's important for me to let you know that I don't know, we're kind of like a tribe of vampires in reverse. Like, we're not going to like drain you of life, but my experience is I come here and just like everyone is just so inviting here, and the reason why is we absolutely need you. We need the newcomer here, and the reason why is that in order for us to stay sober and to have these amazing lives as a result of the 12 steps, as a result of having a sponsor, my sponsor's name is Larry J, as a result of a home group, my home group's the Bellflower Big Book Group. We meet on Monday nights tonight, actually. We have about 350 people in the room here in Southern California, about 150 more on Zoom. That fluctuates because people come on for the main speaker and like leave early and do all that kind of stuff. And I go to, we have 5 meetings a week, which I adore. And of course, by having a sobriety date, 11-12-07, my only one. So nothing's made of wood, knock wood. And I'm so grateful for that. What that means is that today, if I'm not having a dyslexic moment, I have 6,847 days without a drink or a drug or anything between me and me, which I found necessary for 30 years. Or to put that in days, like that's 28 days, 9 months, and 18 years, one day at a time. And a few things about me you should know. You should know that I'm really, really good at feeling bad. I assume that if you're on here, a few things about you, that you're like me, you're really good at feeling bad. If you just stopped your solution recently in the last 90 days, you might be feeling kind of crappy a lot of the time because you no longer have the solution to all your freaking feeling bad skills. And I remember in my first 90 days, it felt like my face was like more facey, like my face was sticking out of my skin more and just, it just was so difficult. So when I would come into a meeting like this one, and it was like playing that game tag when I was a kid where I would get to safe and it's like, no one can get me here. I'm safe right here, right now. And if that's what a meeting is starting to feel like, welcome, congratulations. If it's not feeling like that, if you're just like, oh, I don't want to be here, but also I'd rather not be dead and I'd rather not be drinking, welcome, welcome. The bottom line is that not only am I really good at feeling bad, but alcohol and drugs fixes it. And the problem with it is that alcohol and drugs also make it far worse. It gives me all a whole new set of feeling bad skills. And Carol actually read it perfectly right there on page 44, line 4, chapter 4, that if when I honestly want to, I find I cannot quit entirely. Now, when I first read that line with my first sponsor, I was like, dude, I quit entirely all the time. I'm really good at stopping. And he's like, no. Entirely means forever. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can't do that one. And it says, or if when drinking, I have little control over the amount I take. And that one I also had trouble with because you know what really helps with this? Either the introduction to They Stopped in Time in the Big Book, the American Big Book, American Canadian, Caribbean, Hawaiian and Island one, or the young people's pamphlet that is fantastic. And both of them talk about people like me. Now I wasn't young when I came in here. I was 42. I'm 61 now. And so my deal was I'm like half the Japanese population. I have natural born anabuse on board. Once I get to throwing up, I can't do what most of you can do, like drink, drunk, puke, rinse, repeat. Like once I get to puking, I'm done. It's over for me. I cannot rally. And so I would try to avoid that drink. And for most of the time, I was good at it. And some for like the hideous times, I wasn't. So I told him, look, I control and enjoy my drinking all the time, except for the times I horribly can't. And he says, look, for someone like you, for someone who's a periodic or a binge drinker, the question is, can you control when you lose control? Now, when he asked me that question, the alcoholic part of me got really excited. It was like, oh, you can do that. You can control when you lose control. You can control like when you lose control, so I can avoid the times so where I lose control. And he's like, no, buddy, you can't. That's the point. I'm like, damn it. And then, like Carol read, if either of those things are true, I'm probably suffering from from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And I like using the word illness. I like using the word malady because, weirdly enough, unlike so many others, I actually don't have the disease of alcoholism. The disease of alcoholism, this is an international meeting. So the disease of alcoholism is defined internationally through the International Classification of Diseases. I don't have that. In the US and Canada, it's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, fifth edition, text revision. And I don't fit for alcohol dependence disorder. I've actually never had delirium tremens. I've actually never been in danger of having seizures when quitting drinking. At my first home group, the round table, like they, it's a first step hall. So they've got, like, along with like the Navy style coffee, they've got the sweetened condensed milk. So when someone comes in and they're shaken, what we do is we pour them like a quarter cup of coffee, a quarter more of the sweetened condensed milk. And when we give them a half cup of like that light tan coffee. Why? Because if they're shaken, they can actually get it down themselves. And second, get them like a good chunk of sugar so that they don't seize. That wasn't my deal. My deal was that if I didn't have a change right before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was at that point where that jumping off point that Wilson talks about, where I knew how to get out. I knew how to be done. I mean, I had a suicide attempt at age 16, 4 days into drinking, handful of Valium, handful of Librium, bottle of Bacardi 151, and it didn't take because I'm a puker. But this time I knew. This time I knew before I came in. A couple other things about me. I mean, I identify individually in terms of gender as he, they, but whatever your identification, once you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, what I discovered is that first of all, people were like regendering me. They were telling me, oh no, honey, you are I, me, mine. Those are your pronouns. Like people were pronouning me and saying, I, me, mine. And I started to identify with that because just like maybe George Harrison, that Beatle was right, like in that song, right? Because yeah, all through the day, I, me, mine, all me, mine. How can I get mine? How can I get more? How can I meet my needs? And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, the very first word of the foreword to the first edition is we. Like I had to become we us. So you're here now. Welcome. Welcome to being one of us. And the first time I thought about joining Alcoholics Anonymous, there's this kind of horror movie, cult horror movie from I think it's in the 40s by called Freaks. And at one point, like all of these like all these carnival freaks from the title are trying to get the main character to kind of drink out of this loving cup, like one of us, one of us. And to me, early on, like before I surrendered to Alcoholics Anonymous, I absolutely thought, that's fine. I was just like the Marx Brothers, just like Groucho Marx. I don't want to belong to a club that would have me. But once I realized that I can't even stay in the human race on my own power, I'll have to do what I can to take my own life. Then that's when I readily wanted to become Lee. I'm too smart for my own good. People told me that. I thought they were cruel, but they were just being accurate. They were telling me, you might be too smart for this thing. You might be too smart for Alcoholics Anonymous. One person, a late member of my current home group, Ray Melbaum, told me what the old timers told him, which was, Hero, you might be too smart to be available for happiness. And I thought, oh, first I thought it was really mean, like some kind of AA hazing. But on the other hand, it felt so freaking accurate because I will outsmart myself. And there's a guy I like. His name was Fritz Perls. He created Gestalt therapy. And Fritz Perls used to say that the intellect is the whore of the intelligence. And I love this sentence because my intellect will whore me out for a drink, for just some immediate satisfaction of my appetite. And I used to be, I mean, on my own power, I want freedom without responsibility. On my own power, I just want to play and never work. And I'm that entitled. And And clearly that's not even possible for children. I mean, because they have chores, they have school, and but that's what I see. And also, I'm a peak experience guy. Like once I discovered alcohol and drugs at the age of 12, like I chased the peak experience. And what I discovered really quickly was that chasing peak experiences is deeply problematic, because when you chase peak experiences the way I do, the recovery time is arduous, is difficult, is low. And I would have these ups and downs and ups and downs. And I remember when I was new sober, I was at the Marina Pacifica Fellowship, and which was at the time underneath like an outdoor mall in Long Beach, in California, which is where I live, which is where I got sober. And I'm down there. And I'm talking, this is like 2000, late 2008, early 2009. I'm a little over a year sober, something like that. And I'm whining to a quadriplegic. He also passed away in the last 5 years. His name was Jimmy Polk. And Jimmy already at that time had a couple dozen years sobriety. And I'm whining to I'm an able-bodied person. You can't see me from the waist down, but I'm an able-bodied person, and I'm whining to a quadriplegic about my day, about like work and finances, just being a whiny, like, well, 1 year old at this point. And Jimmy just lays it on me. Jimmy just is like, Hero, when I'm over there in that VA hospital and they have me hooked up to that heart rate monitor, and it goes up and it goes down, man, I'm freaking delighted, because if it's a straight line, even if it's way up here, that ain't good. And I got it, because that's what I was seeking. I was seeking to have like a straight line, just peak experience all the time. There was a song back in, I want to say, the 30s, by Louis Jordan and his orchestra, called "What's the Use of Getting Sober, Parens, If You're Gonna Get Drunk Again?" And it's and in the middle of it, there's like, it calls the time, like at 10 o'clock he goes out to get another drink, at 11 o'clock he goes out to get another drink, until it's dawn, and then it goes into the chorus, what's the use of getting sober if you're gonna get drunk again? And or there was that poem by the French poet Baudelaire, where the refrain is, be drunken always. And this just seemed so sexy to me as a teenager, but you bring this into my adulthood and it's not sexy. You bring this into my adulthood, and I blamed everything else for all of my failures, for taking 7 years instead of 4 to graduate from college. I'm dropping out of 2 PhD programs, and I didn't realize that what I needed was a spiritual experience. Now, what I was seeking all the time as a teenager in my peak experiences, I would have classified those as peak experiences. John and me were talking about peak experiences just in the last 48 hours, and we would both chase these experiences. And the problem with them is that they leave us like serotonin, dopamine depleted, like, feeling horrible. And what's crazy is that like there's an appendix in the Big Book, Appendix 2, called the Spiritual Experience, and in there it quotes this American psychologist, William James, in saying that, like, most of us have the educational variety of a spiritual experience, and in the first paragraph it defines a spiritual experience. It operationalizes it. It gives us a concrete definition, and it says that a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, as described in this book, is simply the personality change sufficient, which means enough, to bring about recovery from alcoholism. Now, the reason why a higher power is needed, and if you're an atheist or agnostic, welcome. I came in as a committed agnostic. I was trained as a social scientist, so I thought that, agnosticism was kind of the scientific method. Anything you can't prove, let me just stay here in my lane and just wait till I can prove wait till I can prove something, or discover proof about it. But what you all told me in Alcoholics Anonymous is, why don't you take all 12 steps? Why don't you get a sponsor? Why don't you just for today, try not drinking and using, and take these steps and see if you end up having what in Appendix 2 is called a spiritual experience, this personality change. And I want to tell you, people in my home group come to me and they ask me, like, well, we know about your profession. Like, you, what's the definition of personality? I'm like, oh, that's easy. A personality is simply my default, my stereotypic way of looking at myself, the world, the future, my perspective on everything, and my stereotypic default ways of responding to all these things outside, inside, between, et cetera. And what's crazy is, and they ask me, well, doesn't it take a long time to change a personality? And I'm, yeah. The science tells us that if someone has a personality disorder, some of them can never be changed, but a select few of them, 10 years of like intensive psychotherapy, you could no longer meet that the criteria for that personality disorder. But it also tells us on that first page of Appendix 2, it says that what can often take months or years often happens in a short time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why like reading We Agnostics is so important. Like I had so many higher powers before I came into AA. I didn't realize it. They were under acknowledged. I didn't discover them until I took my fourth step. Like your opinion, being invited to things, material things were so many of them were higher, my higher power. Success was a higher power. Things going well was a higher power. And what I realized was that these were all completely insufficient. I needed something that I thought was impossible, that I thought was impossible. There's this Algerian Jewish philosopher. He passed away in the early 2000, the ones, he was an atheist Jew who was educated in Paris, and he created the entire philosophical field of deconstruction. His name was Jacques Derrida. And Jacques Derrida would say this thing that describes what happens for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. First, I'm very interested in justice. And what pisses me off more is when justice isn't done. And Jacques Derrida says about justice that justice doesn't exist. But we have to make laws. Every law will guarantee injustice, but we shouldn't give up. We should keep making better and better laws so that we can approach this impossible thing called justice. Similarly, he says about forgiveness that forgiveness doesn't exist. But if it did exist, he always does this move. If it did exist, forgiveness could only apply to the unforgivable. And it turns out that discovering how to forgive the unforgivable, not if like I give you $5 and you can't pay me back. If I say I forgive it, it's not forgiveness. I don't even need the freaking $5. Please don't text me for $5. No, you can. I just won't give it to you. But the point is that how do I forgive something that's completely unforgivable? And the answer is, well, if you take these steps and you go through this amends process, that you absolutely can. But the point is this, because we're talking for newcomers, and because I'm talking for about like if you have trouble with the word God, if you have difficulty with God, don't worry about that. That's Advanced Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a later step. That's what I was told to tell people that I was sending to AA until I needed it myself. And my experience is this, is that just like Jacques Derrida said, that God doesn't exist. But if God did exist, he says, God would be the name of the event. And when continental philosophers talk about the event, it's kind of like what Carl Jung talks about, phenomena in here. A phenomena is something that we don't quite understand, something that we can't actually cause, whether it's a phenomenon of craving or some sort of spiritual phenomenon, like a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience. And he says that God doesn't exist, but if God did exist, God would be the name of the event of where the impossible is made possible. So many of you who are on the 90 and under day count, every single one of us is an example of where the impossible is made possible. The language of making the impossible possible makes no sense here. But like there's a minister in New York who talks about how, it doesn't make sense, but it makes spirit. And even this sentence doesn't make sense until you have this experience. That my experience is that this God that I didn't believe in has manifested in me, just like my late sponsor, Johnny Harris, who died at 95 years old and 64 years sober. I heard him speak when I had less than 2 months sober, and I heard him say that the 12 steps exist for me to empty myself of me, so I can automatically fill up with this power that we happen to call God. It might be very confusing. And this power, like I said, is my experience of this power is exactly what I was seeking in drugs and alcohol. Except what I have to tell you about this power that you'll find and that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, no negative side effect profile, no freaking hangovers, no liver failure as a result of coming to believe in this power. And if this is still too freaking advanced, no worries. The first time the Big Book talks about coming to believe, it says we had to come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of our lives as we had been living it. And I need to let you know that today, the way I woke up, I mean, I woke up today, I did my day count. I read the 24-hour day book twice. I read the daily reflection entry twice. I asked God to divorce my thinking from selfishness, self-pity, self-seeking motives, and then I considered my plans for the day. I wrote a little meditation, and immediately, I got onto a Zoom I'm a member of the working group for the proposed Asians and Asian American Alcoholic and Alcoholics Anonymous pamphlet. Got on there, and right afterwards, I'm just in like total self-pity, and like, it's what I'm gonna do early. And dude, I wake up later than most like hardworking Americans, and I'm full of my own self-pity today at 18 plus years sober. And what I had to do is I had to have an attitude change, and I had to realize, oh, look, the hopelessness and futility of exactly how I've been living my life. And what I had the chance to do is have a little workout, hydrate a lot, spend a little bit of time with my wife, help a couple people show up here. And what a transformation that has made. I hope you get to make that transformation with us as well, one day at a time. Thank you.